Enjoying the Wealth Management Invest podcast? Don't miss The Weighing Machine by Orion Portfolio Solutions. Dive into market insights with Rusty Vanneman, CIO, Wealth Management, leveraging his 30-plus years of experience to guide investors towards their long-term goals. Every episode offers deep dives into investment strategies, enriching your financial journey. For a richer understanding and strategic investor insights, make The Weighing Machine your next listen. Expand your investment horizon with Rusty today. Orion Portfolio Solutions, LLC, and Orion Company is a registered investment advisor. Hello, and welcome to the Wealth Management Invest podcast. I'm your host, David Bodimer, part of the editorial team with wealthmanagement.com. Today, we're going to talk fixed income. I'm excited to have with us Karen Vera, who's managing director and head of iShares U.S. Fixed Income Strategy with BlackRock's Indexed Fixed Income. She is a subject matter expert on fixed income ETFs and leads the commercialization efforts across the firm. Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, David. Happy to be here today.
So before we kind of get into the meat of talking about fixed income, if you want to take a minute to, you know, actually just kind of curious to see how you ended up in this world and how you ended up with BlackRock and how you ended up focused on fixed income.
Yeah, my career journey, I guess, started when I was in college and I didn't know if I wanted to be an engineer like most people in my family or study something else. And I came across the finance curriculum at the University of Texas and I really just enjoyed it. I enjoyed kind of the mathematical aspects of it. I enjoyed learning about markets, but I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So when I graduated, I found a job at Washington Mutual Bank up in Seattle. So I moved from Austin, Texas to Seattle, sight unseen, to take a job at the bank. And I had a rotational program where we learned about four different departments over 2 years. And then at the end of that 2 years, I got a job in the Treasury Department where I was a short-term funding trader. We would try to make the bank's balance sheet balance every day by transacting in federal funds, repurchase agreements, as well as even issuing short-term debt. So that's really where I learned a lot about the fixed income markets, really from a borrower's perspective. And then unfortunately, during the financial crisis, the bank did not survive. And I got a job at a private wealth manager in Seattle, where I really learned about portfolio management, managing money for individuals, and selecting ETFs and mutual funds, and even separately managed accounts. So it, for me, it was a great introduction to kind of bridge some of the knowledge that I had learned at the bank, as well as that I had completed my CFA during that time too. And then I got the job at BlackRock. There was a window of opportunity that opened up to move down to San Francisco. And I've been on the iShares fixed income strategy team since 2010. And I really just love this role. We get to work with investors of all stripes, like large investors, small investors. We get to work all across the fixed income markets, everything from treasuries out to emerging market debt. And every day is, I think, new and exciting because there's so many things that go on in the markets. And then we have to think about how to help people navigate through that.
So you've kind of been on both sides. You've been on the asset management side, but also in on the advisor side in terms of just looking at these assets.
That's right. And I think it really helps me whenever I'm speaking with advisors, whether they're at wirehouses or registered investment advisors. I've kind of been in their shoes where you're looking at multiple products and trying to make the best decision for clients, as well as just thinking about that practice management element. How do I make sure my business is being run most efficiently?
And so where are we with, you know, with fixed income right now? You know, we've had this kind of period of the Fed trying to deal with inflation and higher interest rates and things being shaken up for a while. Now we're at a point where we're kind of expecting some Fed cuts at some point, although I guess it's still a little unclear when that's going to happen. So what is that, you know, what does that mean in terms of trying to, you know, like think about the space?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people right now, we've just come off of a very aggressive tightening cycle to try to deal with the effects of inflation without ruining economic growth that's occurred post-COVID. So we're kind of at the peak of the short-term rate cycle. So the Fed's been on hold since July of last year, and we're expecting that they'll remain on hold, maybe cutting at this point, maybe anywhere from 1 to 3 times towards the back half of the year. So we're also have an inverted yield curve, and that's where the interest rates on the longer end of the curve are lower than the front end of the curve, which would imply over time interest rates should come down. So I think we're in a wait and see moment for a lot of investors. They're sitting in a lot of cash on the sidelines. We see both money market fund assets are at all-time highs, as well as just bank deposit products. So I think a lot of people are kind of afraid to add some more interest rate risk or duration to portfolios. So we have a lot of discussions about that with people. But I think the important thing is think about your investments long term. I think while cash and cash equivalents are paying about 5% right now, they're not going to continue to pay 5% next year and the year after and the year after that. So we're helping people think through ways to term out some of that exposure and lock in some of the yields that we have today.
And how do ETFs play a role as a wrapper for fixed income?
Fixed income ETFs are actually the fastest growing portion of the fixed income markets. I think a lot of investors have discovered that the wrapper allows for daily transparency, ease of trading, and because there's so many different fixed income ETFs now in all parts of the market, they can really get very granular with their fixed income exposures. Year to date, we've had about $52 billion coming into fixed income ETFs. And about half of that has been in the core and core plus categories. So think, big funds like AGG, for example, have been one of our biggest inflows this year. So I think a lot of people, as they're looking out for fixed income, they're thinking, do I want to use an individual bond? There's some pros and cons with doing that. Do I want to invest in a mutual fund? Do I want to invest in an ETF? And we've really seen index tracking ETFs in particular are becoming the vehicle of choice because of the low fees as well. So between the trading benefits, the granularity, the low cost and tax efficiency, we've seen more and more people start to gravitate towards using ETFs alongside other maybe stocks and bonds and mutual funds they have in their portfolios already.
And how do you think about it from like a product development side and thinking about the menu of fixed income ETFs that BlackRock is bringing to the table? That you guys obviously have a massive amount for people to choose from. So how do you think about product development and how do you think about guiding investors through like looking through all of these options?
Yeah, I think a lot of the kind of more plain vanilla basic, 1 to 5 year corporate bond exposures have already been launched. So what we think about is what goals and objectives are we trying to achieve for investors? Is there something new or do they just need a more granular exposure than what's already been out there? So a lot of our product launches the last few years have either been along the lines of our term maturity ETFs. So those are our iBonds. Those are ETFs that actually have a maturity date. So every year we close down the current year's one. So our 2023 ones just matured back in December. And then we want to make sure we have 10 years out in the market. So then we tend to launch ones with that 10-year maturity in the current calendar year. So that's been a big area of focus, continuing to just let people ladder out with fixed income ETFs. We've also launched some more active strategies. So there's some parts of the fixed income market where maybe it's more difficult to index it in, and instead of doing an index fund, maybe we might want to do it with an active fund. I'd say our bank loan ETF, BK or BRLN, is one of those examples where with bank loans, they can have some liquidity and settlement mismatches. So we wanted to make sure we were managing through that prudently. So we launched an active fund. But you'll also see, I think, more strategies utilizing options. Last year, we came out with our fixed income buy write ETFs, which is a covered call writing strategy on three different parts of the fixed income market: treasuries, corporates, and high yield. And that's another way to get some additional sources of income in the portfolio through options writing. And I would say that's been really popular both on the equity side and now on the fixed income side as well, as more and more advisors are looking for ways to boost income in portfolios.
You just used a term there called laddering. Could you talk a bit about what does that mean?
Yeah, a bond ladder's been a strategy that's been around for some time. And the concept is that over my investment horizon, whether that's let's say 5 years, I'm going to go ahead and purchase bonds that have maturity dates in each one of those 5 years. That way, I have proceeds that are coming due every year. And then when those proceeds come due, what I'll typically do is go buy the calendar year beyond my current ladder to go ahead and reinvest those proceeds. And it's a pretty effective and simple strategy. You don't have to make a bet on interest rate risk. You can have about the same amount of money coming due every year, and it's a way to give you a distinct point to decide to reinvest. So most people were building bond ladders with individual bonds. And so we might see, if you have a 5 or 10 year ladder, you might only have 5 to 10 bonds actually in the portfolio. So you actually have some concentration risk there and you don't have much diversification. What we thought through back in 2010 when we launched our first iBonds is how can we have the best of both worlds? How can we have something that has the maturity date like a bond, is diversified in the way that a mutual fund is, and you can trade it on the exchange like a stock? And that's really the idea behind iBonds, is they're holding bonds that mature in each calendar year. And at the end of the calendar year, the fund will delist from the exchange, pass back its final net asset value to shareholders, and along the way, pay a monthly income. So we started off just doing these in munis, but we now have them in treasuries, corporates, TIPS, and even high yield. So we have a bond ladder tool on our BlackRock Advisor Center, where an advisor can come in and select a calendar date, select a dollar amount, and build a bond ladder within those different sectors. And you can see the yields, they get updated every day. So I think that's a great way right now. If you're undecided about how to dip your toe back into the fixed income markets, buying a short-term bond ladder is a great way to go ahead and term out some of those maturities, add some more stability back to the portfolio, and not have to worry about is the Fed's gonna, cut rates this month or that month. I think that's been a strategy that we've seen pretty strong inflows of almost $4 billion into our iBonds products this year, with advisors doing that, just building bond ladders, especially for small dollar accounts, because you typically would see people building bond ladders in large dollar amount SMAs, separately managed accounts. But if you don't have the investment minimums for that, this is a good strategy that you can get started with even some small dollar amounts.
Well, yes, that's something that any investor can have access to, not necessarily be above a certain threshold to qualify for the SMAs.
That's right. And we actually see a lot of the iBonds assets are being held at many of the wirehouses, where maybe they might have some, a bond separate account for a client, but then maybe they've got a retirement account that has a smaller dollar amount that they want to do this strategy inside, or maybe a grandkids account, or just something that doesn't meet the minimum. So I think that they're just really great tools for the everyday investor or even larger clients with higher net worths to just add some liquidity to their bond portfolios.
And it seems like a good way to achieve some like vintage diversification, right? By having stuff staggered along these different years that you're not too concentrated in like one point in time, right? Is that right?
That's absolutely right. We do say some people who are in retirement and they utilize this as a way to have some spending money coming due every year. So some of the money that matures doesn't get reinvested back into other bond ladders. We
Okay.
see people spending that. So I think that's great. We often get the question too, what if I want to sell it early? What if I don't want to wait till December? We see anywhere from 5 to 25% of shareholders selling early. So you can always, because it is exchange traded, you can always sell it at any point in the trading day. So we do see some people utilizing them for kind of short-term cash management. Maybe I just need to lock up money for 9 months or for 18 months, and they want to do that with one of the iBonds.
Got it. So because it's an ETF, there's full liquidity. This is not something that you're locked into for a certain amount of time.
Exactly.
But ideally, what you're talking about, so there may be situations where you want to do something like that, but maybe not ideally. But overall, the idea of creating this ladder is about having this exposure that gives you access to potentially different kinds of bonds over different kinds of periods, and so you have a nice balanced bond portfolio.
That's right. We see a lot of people getting started with our corporate bond ladders first. But I think the treasury ones have also become really popular. If people say, you know what, I don't want to take on any risk with this. I just want to be invested in treasury bonds over this period. We had a lot of people calling us up last year and saying, I just want to buy 1 year T-bills. But it's really hard to do that in my traditional fee-based advisory accounts. They're just not really set up to do that. How can I do that at scale? So we worked with an RIA, and the CIO just wanted to put in 1 year treasury positions in all of his accounts to be conservative. And we helped him execute that with one of our iBonds.
So aside from this, are there other areas that are really active right now?
We're starting to see people really wanting to lock in these higher yields in fixed income. So if we think about it, the treasury yields are kind of 4 to 5%, depending on that point on the yield curve. But then when you start moving up into corporate bonds and high yield bonds, you can get, 7, 8% right now in some of these categories. So I think with obviously with higher income or higher yielding categories in fixed income, you are going to be taking on some risk. But if you take a look at the default cycle right now, we're still seeing only about 1 or 2% annualized default rates in high yield. I think with the Fed's really been trying to thread the needle of how do we get this soft landing scenario where inflation's coming down, but we're still seeing job creation and a strong economy. And that is good for high yield bonds. We've seen some movement where money's coming back into high yield strategies. And in fact, we even have a new flexible, actively managed flexible income strategy. The ticker's BINC for BlackRock Flexible Income. And that one holds not only investment grade corporate bonds, but it'll holding some of those higher yield in categories as well, like high yield, emerging market debt, some European high yield as well. And it's designed to be very diversified, where you're still getting some high income with the least amount of volatility. So we're seeing a lot of investors who want to add income to portfolio choosing kind of more plain vanilla high yield ETFs like USHY or some of our more flexible income strategies that can go in multiple different categories as a way to add more higher yielding income to portfolios.
And this is for, again, any kind of investor that may, since it's an ETF, it's available to everybody. But is this, are you seeing particular interest among certain kinds of investors in these products?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are investors who are a little bit more tactical with their asset allocation. So I would say that tends to be more of our registered investment advisor clients where they have a in-house CIO who wants to change up the portfolio asset allocation. I think we're seeing a lot of investors who are feeling more comfortable with some of the higher yielding income categories, where that really wasn't the case of this time last year. We just saw last year a lot of interest in treasuries, people not really knowing how high the Fed was going to go, and wanting to keep things really short. But now we are seeing people add duration and shifting that duration out. But I think still the biggest overweight that we see within advisors' portfolios are to cash and ultra short-term bonds. We've got some data from advisors who utilize our BlackRock Advisor Center that about the average moderate portfolio is sitting about 23% in cash and short-term bonds, whereas our benchmarks usually hold about 2% in that cash category. So I still think there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines that will probably step out of cash as soon as they get the all clear that the Fed is actually going to cut.
So we're kind of risk averse, you know, people went into cash and it's kind of slowly coming out.
Exactly. I don't we haven't really seen the catalyst for a lot of that money to move until I think the Fed does actually cut. And given that the inflation prints are still coming in a little bit hot, like 3.2% above their target, we keep seeing that kind of moving, marching out. It was first, it was probably May, then it was June. There's a chance July, but we could see the Fed not cut until the fall. And so I think in that case, people are like, well, you know what? I'm happy getting 5%. I'm not taking any risk in my money market fund. But I think what tends to happen is we do see yields move in advance of the Fed moving down. So we are advising people that if you look at your asset allocation and it's a bit off track, let's do some spring cleaning here and move it back towards your duration target. We still see, if the average duration for the bond market is about 6 years, that average advisor is about 5 years right now. So not super short, but still a little bit short of that, long-term target.
In terms of like looking at the inflation numbers, are there any components that are driving it right now that are that could affect the outlook around what the Fed might do?
Yeah, I think a lot of that the inflation is proving stickier than they expected. We're in an environment where the short-term rates are at this point almost 2% higher than inflation, but we're still seeing some categories pick up, namely in housing, and that kind of rent, those rent numbers in particular are backward looking. And then if you use some of the more real-time sources, we do see a little bit of pressure where rents are starting to come down. But I think if you've got, high mortgage rates, that's kind of also leaking into the housing market as well. So we're seeing that being sticky. And then I think energy prices as well, as we're continuing to see some conflicts in the Middle East, that's going to potentially move up the price of oil, and that is also an inflationary effect. So I think they're kind of fighting some your broader geopolitical forces, as well as just with where mortgage rates are right now. That can also, both of those contributors can help keep, may keep inflation higher throughout the rest of this year.
Yeah, well, it seems like the overall the inflation narrative has been hard to navigate because at different moments it feels like different things have maybe been affecting it. So like we went through all the supply chain disruptions, geopolitical things that you're talking about, the shelter issue. So it's not like it's even been like one thing this whole time. There's like it's almost like there's different subcomponents that are at different points affecting inflation, and that's maybe making it tricky for the Fed then to like to navigate how to how they want what they want to do with interest rates.
That's right. Yeah, they love core PCE as their primary measure. I've seen a lot of other market participants who are taking different components of the CPI or components of core PCE and looking at maybe 3 month numbers rather than 1 month annualized prints. And so I think it's moving in the right direction, definitely, compared to where we were a year ago. But I think the Fed's just going to continue to be vigilant and is not going to move that rate down too quickly. We could even see a situation where they cut once or twice and then see how the market digests that. I think on the plus side, if you take a look at the corporate bond market, we've seen credit spreads have really tightened in, and we're still seeing a lot of primary issuance in the market. So I think a lot of corporate issuers have gotten used to this yield environment, and they're continuing to borrow to fund their businesses, and we've seen pretty healthy primary issuance market in the corporate world.
Are there good resources for folks who, if they like, I know that you, you're a podcast other place, you appear on podcasts, you've done some writing. Are there good places for folks just to follow like the kind of either what you're doing or BlackRock doing on just monitoring the market?
Yeah, we have a lot of resources on both our websites, iShares.com and BlackRock.com. On our iShares website, we publish an investment directions piece that will give you kind of an overview of what's going on in the markets, our views on them, and even ways to use ETFs to express some of those views. So we're really excited about that piece. And then on our BlackRock.com website, we've got our BlackRock Investment Institute, and that is a great global resource for everything that's going on more globally in the market, stocks and bonds. And so I personally utilize both of those when I'm looking at our in-house views and just to also, get a read on some of the most recent economic prints. So the investment directions on iShares.com and the BlackRock Investment Institute are both great resources.
Right. Well, we'll make sure to have links to that stuff in the show notes for folks so they can click directly to that. For folks that are listening at home, check out the episode notes for links to all that. I've taken a chunk of your time here, so I appreciate you answering all these questions. Before I let you go, just wanted to give you a chance if anything that you want to anything that we didn't touch on that you think would be like a good takeaway for folks or anything that you wanted to reemphasize before we wrap up.
No, absolutely. I think, it's a tricky market right now, and everybody doesn't want to step into too much duration too soon. But I would say just make sure you're being diversified. I think everybody is probably overweight stocks right now, and they're kind of waiting in too much cash for their fixed income allocations. So I would say, use this opportunity while the Fed's pausing to rethink your fixed income, and use the opportunity to term out some of those yields, lock in some of those yields today, because they won't be sticking around forever.
Well, Karen, thank you again for your time. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
So, David, how do we get in touch with you if people have more questions?
For our ongoing coverage, wealthmanagement.com, the investment section, that we have and a weekly newsletter that folks should subscribe to, our investment strategies newsletter. If you're not subscribing to that, please sign up for it in addition to, checking out our regular podcast episodes here.
Okay. Thank you both. And thank you for listening today. Please like, follow, and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, I'm Wendy McConnell.
Enjoying the Wealth Management Invest podcast? Don't miss The Weighing Machine by Orion Portfolio Solutions. Dive into market insights with Rusty Vanneman, CIO, Wealth Management, leveraging his 30-plus years of experience to guide investors towards their long-term goals. Every episode offers deep dives into investment strategies, enriching your financial journey. For a richer understanding and strategic investor insights, make the Weighing Machine your next listen. Expand your investment horizon with Rusty today. Orion Portfolio Solutions, LLC, an Orion company, is a registered investment advisor.